Hi, it's Linda with the Talking Information Center. It is Friday, February 20th, 2026, and thanks for joining me for the next 30 minutes reading the Patriot Ledger. Starting on the front page, God took him too soon. 4 days a week, accountant Jim Parker had lunch at his second home, Dina's Pizza in Rockland. The owner, Sia Botseras, looked forward to seeing him come through the door in his inimitable style. He'd give everybody a hard time, and they were like family, Botseras said. He had a strong personality, and people loved him. During tax season, he'd always tell me, I hate people. And I'd tell him, no, you love people, and people love you. And God took him too soon. When James W. Parker died January 26th at Brockton Hospital after collapsing in his East Bridgewater driveway while shoveling snow and clearing off his wife, Kathy's car, there was widespread shock. A Marshfield man, Paul Kent, 64, also died while shoveling snow in that storm. Parker had turned 60 in October, remarried 9 months ago, and was as outgoing and active as ever. Although he had diabetes, he didn't have any heart problems of which his family was aware. Longtime friends describe him as never sick, never any injuries, always a happy guy. The former Weymouth resident was a positive, generous, and consoling presence in many people's lives. He was definitely a people's person, his wife Kathy Parker said. When the couple reconnected 40 years after first meeting as bank tellers in high school, she told him, "You have so many buddies." Grief-stricken since he died, she has been helped by text messages from those who knew him and loved him, asking, "Is there anything I can do? I'm here for you." Parker had loved sports since childhood and was most passionate about baseball and wrestling. He played second base in high school, coached his sons Rob and Alex in the Weymouth Little League and Babe Ruth Leagues, became an umpire in the South Shore Umpires Association, was a past president of the Bo Sox Club, the official booster club of the Boston Red Sox, and also coached Weymouth American Legion senior baseball. Alex, 24, of Abington, describes him as a font of knowledge. Weymouth's Babe Ruth League posted this accolade on Facebook. He always came to the field armed with plenty of baseball stories, and his love of the game was always on full display. At Jim Parker's wake on January 30th, more than 500 people lined up at the McDonald Cahoon Funeral Home in South Weymouth. Kathy Parker was struck by how some people coming through the line had gone to grade school with him. Others had known him through his many activities around town. A frequent description of Jim Parker was that once he was your friend, you were friends forever. If he met a person and he liked you, he ran with it, his former wife, Carlin Parker, said. He'd go to lunch with people he had just met. The two were married in 1986, were together for 27 years, and divorced in 2024. Carlin is a member of the Fawcett family that founded Dependable Cleaners in Quincy, where she and her son Rob both work today. But Sarah's cried when Parker's oldest son, Rob, 27, of Pembroke, called with the news that his father had died. Her family had built up a close relationship with Parker at their pizza restaurant. When Botseras' father, George, died, Parker helped comfort her extended family. Her mother made Greek lasagna and Greek cookies at home and sent some to the restaurant for Parker. Another customer brought in her late husband's umpire hat for Parker to use. Every week, he would come in and he always sat in the same place and he'd have the same meal, depending on what day it was, Botseras said. Steak tips on Mondays, chicken fingers on Tuesdays, Wednesday was wild card day, and burgers on Fridays. Parker liked the corner table on the right because he could hold up his newspaper to block him from view if he saw someone he wanted to avoid, but that rarely happened. Matt Newman of Pembroke and Tommy McGee of Hanover are two of Parker's closest lifelong friends. The three grew up in Weymouth, met in first grade, played street sports, Little League, and Babe Ruth baseball, and became part of each other's lives. "He's like a brother to me, and I already have six brothers," Newman said. When his wife, Suzanne, died at age 51 in 2022, leaving two children, Parker was a steady support, helping to pay for the large gathering after her funeral. Newman and McGee described seeing their grade school friend grow up to become very well known around town. "Jim was always fascinated by people and wanted to be around them," Newman said. "He could be so disappointed if you held different views. but he would never hold that against you. He was a staunch Republican, but it didn't matter that his closest neighbor was a Democrat. McGee, a retired Whitman postal carrier, also described a lasting boyhood bond formed while playing wiffle ball, street hockey, and school sports. While Parker liked to tease his friends, McGee said, he didn't hate anyone. Once he knew personal stuff about you, he'd make jokes and maybe give you a hard time, but he knew he was making a joke. Parker's older son, Rob, 27, agreed his dad could be sarcastic, witty, a quick tongue. What Rob remembers most, however, is how, no matter how late his tax work kept him up at night, if either of us had a game the next day, he would be there on 3 hours of sleep. He never missed a game. In the early 2000s, when his sons were in the Weymouth schools, Jim Parker was elected to the Weymouth School Committee. He felt that his financial background would be useful and served 2 terms, choosing not to run again in 2009. Kathy Laveridge, 74, of Weymouth, was a home economics teacher who served as president of the Weymouth Teachers Union before she retired in 2008. Laveridge attended all the school committee meetings and said, Jim did a good job listening to both teachers and parents on important school topics. As Parker's family experienced the large number of mourners coming through the line, they gained a new appreciation for his outgoing nature. I thought how his favorite saying was, I hate people, and I realized that was just in dealing with certain situations at work, and that the opposite was true, Rob Parker said. To see all these people coming through the line was a wow moment. Also on the front page, state legislatures push to legalize self-driving cars by Margie Cullen. Waymo, a self-driving car company, wants to come to Boston. And some state legislatures are pushing for autonomous vehicles to operate all over Massachusetts. February 5th, Waymo announced that it is planning to return to Boston after a stint in 2025 to continue effectively adapting to Boston's cobblestones, narrow alleyways, roundabouts, and turnpikes. But the company said that it needs the state to legalize fully autonomous vehicles before Bostonians will be able to use their cars fully human-free. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, more than half of states have enacted some kind of legislation related to autonomous vehicles. Massachusetts is not one of them. In Massachusetts, companies that want to operate self-driving cars on public roads must fill out an application package with the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. As of February 9th, Waymo had not yet done so, a spokesperson for the department said. But now, lawmakers in the state are working to clear the way for self-driving cars, not just in Boston, but across the state. Senator William Driscoll, Democrat of Milton, has filed a bill that would allow the use of autonomous cars on state highways as long as they meet certain requirements. Autonomous vehicles are here and more are on the way, Driscoll said in a statement to the Telegram and Gazette. Massachusetts needs to have a clear and consistent policy for them. The legislation I filed starts that conversation. The bill has a corresponding House bill sponsored by Representative Dan Cahill, Democrat of Lynn, and Representative Natalie Blaze, Democrat Deerfield. The bills would create a regulatory framework for autonomous vehicles to operate in the state, including directing the Department of Transportation to create and issue licenses for operating self-driving cars. The bills stipulate that a self-driving car must meet certain conditions to drive on state highways. It must be able to give control to the human passenger in case of a failure of the automated driving system. And if there is a failure, the vehicle must only achieve a minimal risk condition. The vehicle must also be capable of operating in compliance with the applicable traffic and car safety laws of the state. Those who want to operate fully autonomous vehicles without human drivers must submit proof that the car is covered by insurance. The minimum amount of liability coverage for death, bodily injury, and property damage must be $1 million, the bill says. The Department of Transportation, the Department of Safety, and the local police department must also be giving a law enforcement interaction plan so that they can safely remove the vehicle from the highway or address other public safety risks. fully autonomous vehicles that are 10,000 pounds or more would be required to have a human driver under the bills. Lawmakers supporting the efforts see self-driving cars as an inevitability, and some local business leaders worry that Massachusetts is falling behind in the world of mobility technology. But the bills are facing pushback from labor unions, who see the efforts as an unchecked expansion of autonomous vehicles that would threaten their jobs and public safety. Driverless cars and trucks pose a serious threat to public safety, our communities, and the livelihoods of the countless dedicated men and women across the Commonwealth who work as professional drivers, said Tom Murray, president of Teamsters Local 25, in a statement. These machines don't benefit working people. They only serve the interests of out-of-state big tech billionaires, and their opinions shouldn't outweigh the needs of Massachusetts residents. They're supporting a different set of bills that would require human operators to be present in all self-driving cars. Others wary of Waymo and self-driving cars have also brought up safety concerns. Waymo in December recalled thousands of vehicles after a glitch in the software caused the cars to drive past stopped school buses, and some cars have crashed into objects and even people. "My focus is on safety and practical ways forward," Driscoll said. "My hope is that the conversations continue to be thoughtful and productive as we explore the pros and cons of AVs in the Commonwealth." Sorry, little coffee there. Next up on the front page, "Despite snow, Mass is still in a drought," by Seth Jacobson. "Based on the piles of snow, you might think we've had enough precipitation in Massachusetts lately. But it wasn't enough to curb the drought conditions in the state that have been ongoing since 2024. Drought conditions are still a problem in most of the Bay State. As of February 11th, 2026, Massachusetts Energy and Environmental Affairs Secretary Rebecca Tepper declared the southeast region of the state has worsened to a level 2 significant drought, and the Millers River Basin has improved. All other regions remain unchanged. Here's what to know. What's the drought status throughout Massachusetts? According to the state, as of February 11th, Cape Cod, along with the southeast, central, and northeast regions of Massachusetts, are in level 2 significant droughts. Nantucket has been hit with a level 3 critical drought status, while the Connecticut River Valley region is only in a level 1 mild drought. The western part of Massachusetts has no drought conditions. According to the Energy and Environmental Affairs, there still hasn't been enough precipitation in the state this winter. During January, Massachusetts received a significant amount of snow and a total of 2 to 3.5 inches of precipitation. In spite of this, precipitation deficits since 2024 remain, a statement said. Additionally, a record cold temperatures and frozen ground have prevented snowmelt from occurring and soaking into the soil, limiting groundwater recharge and discharge to streams. With the drought conditions, many water bodies are at lower levels, and groundwater stores are declining. Wildfires have also been a problem. What steps should people take in a drought? The state task force recommends minimizing overall water use and being particularly mindful of indoor water use, following local water use restrictions, limiting or prohibiting washing of hard surfaces like sidewalks, patios, driveways, and siding, fixing any indoor leaks from toilets, faucets, and showers, which can result in more than 60% of indoor water use, monitoring total household water use shown on your water bill for sudden increases, which often indicate leaks, conducting regular inspections of all pipes and fixtures, including those located in utility rooms, crawl spaces, and other hidden areas, using dishwashers rather than hand washing dishes, run the dishwasher only on a full load, reducing shower length. Wellfleet Bridge nears completion, by Denise Coffey. In Wellfleet, the incoming tide flowed past concrete and steel pilings of the new Chequesset Neck Road Bridge on February 5th, where water swirled and eddied on the riverside of the bridge, red-breasted mergansers dove for food. The scene was a testament to the engineering and the reason behind the $32 million bridge construction, which is over 80% complete. The whole point of this project is to ultimately restore historic wetlands, said Wes Stinson, a senior project representative for Apex Companies. A big part of the job is maintaining the flow of river. The bridge is the linchpin of the $70 million Herring River Restoration Project that will restore 1,100 acres of estuary. Stinson said contractors had to choreograph a project that required balancing engineering and construction of the bridge with the overall engineering of the restoration project. Keeping water flow the same was essential through all stages of construction, whether building watertight cofferdams to build the bridge foundations or moving water flow from the old tidal gates to the gates in the new span. Environmental permits for the project required it, according to Carol Ridley, project coordinator for the Herring River Restoration Project. The location of tidal flow shifted with construction activity. Crews continuously monitor upstream and downstream gauges to make sure the tidal flow remains consistent. And before any decisions are made about the timing or location of tidal flow, discussions are held with the State Division of Marine Fisheries, the Wellfleet Shellfish Department, and other regulators to ensure the fisheries are protected. Contractors from MIG Corporation built the southern span of the 160-foot bridge first. They built coffer cells to create a dry environment before constructing the span's foundation. When the southern span was completed, the tidal flow was moved from the old three-bay culvert to tidal gates in the new span. The bridge will have 17 tidal gates when completed. Each 35,000-pound gate measures 10 feet high by 6 feet wide. Some gates have flaps that allow water to drain from the river, but can be closed when the tide comes in. Motors will move the gates up and down. Tidal flow will remain the same until fall of 2026 before any changes are made. The flow will be adjusted incrementally over time and the impacts monitored closely, Ridley said. In other news, former prince arrested, suspected of misconduct by Kim Helmgard. British police have arrested Andrew Mountbatten Windsor on suspicion of misconduct in public life, according to multiple news outlets in the United Kingdom. The UK's Thames Valley Police said in a February 19th statement they arrested an unnamed man in his 60s and were carrying out searches at addresses in Norfolk and Berkshire, adding that an investigation has been opened. The Daily Telegraph newspaper reported that 6 unmarked police cars and around 8 plainclothes officers were seen arriving at Wood Farm on the Sandringham Estate in Norfolk, England, where Andrew recently moved. The BBC was the first to report the development. O'Brien Grandison, a professor of policing at the UK's Birmingham City University, said in emailed comments that Andrew is the first senior royal to be arrested in modern history. The specific police allegations under investigation have not been released. British police said earlier in February that officers were considering allegations drawn from files recently released by the US government that King Charles' younger brother passed confidential information to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The former prince has faced intense scrutiny over his friendship with Epstein and was stripped of his royal titles in 2025 over those links. Andrew, who turned 66 on the day of the reported arrest, has denied any wrongdoing and said he regrets the friendship. He has not responded to requests for comment following the latest Epstein files published by the U.S. Justice Department. In one photo that appeared in the files released by the Justice Department in relation to the U.S. investigation of Epstein, the former prince can be seen kneeling on all fours over an unidentified woman on the ground. I have learned with the deepest concern the news about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and suspicion of misconduct in public office, King Charles said in a statement. What now follows is the full, fair, and proper process by which this issue is investigated in the appropriate manner and by the appropriate authorities. In this, as I have said before, they have our full and wholehearted support and cooperation. Let me state clearly, The law must take its course, he said. Some U.S. lawmakers and the family of his most prominent accuser, Virginia Guilfoyle, who alleged in her posthumous memoir that she was a victim of Epstein's sex trafficking ring, have appealed to Andrew to testify in the United States about his Epstein connections. The former prince reached an out-of-court settlement with Guilfoyle in 2022. Andrew denied any wrongdoing in the case, and he did not admit any liability. Guilfoyle died by suicide in April of 2025. At last, today, our broken hearts have been lifted at the news that no one is above the law, not even royalty, Guilfoyle's brothers and their wives said in a February 19th statement. British police have also opened an investigation into the UK's former ambassador to the United States, Peter Mendelssohn, over his Epstein connections. Green bashes GOP over donor class, Epstein files, by Catherine Palmer. Former Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, once one of Donald Trump's staunchest allies, has again unleashed criticism on his administration, laying into the Republican Party as it gears up for the 2026 midterms. Greene criticized the party on a range of issues, warning that its actions regarding health care costs, the Epstein files, and support of Trump's aggressive foreign policy decisions will cost the GOP in the November elections. If you had put America first from the start, instead of your rich donor class and foreign policy, you wouldn't have to strategize on how to gaslight Americans, Green wrote in a long social media post on February 17th. If you had not called the Epstein files a hoax and treated the Epstein survivors, rape and trafficking victims, like they didn't exist, and if you would release all the files and put your rich, powerful friends in prison, then Americans might actually listen to your messaging. Green also entreated the party to stop the bullying, harassment, and name-calling, writing that it was immature and was turning people away. Green became a household name early in her congressional career, often grabbing attention for her conspiratorial beliefs and polarizing comments. Yet, the Georgia congresswoman began to publicly split with the president and leaders of her party in 2025, culminating in a falling out with the president in the last few months of the year. Green criticized House GOP leadership during the record-long government shutdown that began in October, airing concerns about rising health care costs that Democrats cited as their reason for denying a vote on a spending package to reopen the government. In the following weeks, she tore into Trump for his foreign policy, taking issue with his foreign trips and hosting international dignitaries, arguing he needed to focus more on domestic issues in line with MAGA's America First credo. The administration's handling of the Epstein files also enraged Green. She became one of a few Republicans who expressed discontent with both the administration's and party's approach to the matter. Trump has publicly rebuked Green over the past few months, more recently calling her a, quote, traitor. She repeated those complaints in her post and accused the GOP of covering up for pedophiles. Majority believe people in power get a pass, poll finds. Files show Epstein had ties to prominent figures, by Jason Lang. In Washington, Americans believe that wealthy and powerful people are rarely held accountable. A new Reuters Ipsos poll found after the release of millions of records on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's connections in elite business and political circles. Some 69% of respondents in the four-day poll, which concluded on February 16th, said their views were captured very well or extremely well by a statement that the Epstein files, quote, show that powerful people in the U.S. are rarely held accountable for their actions. Another 17% said the statement described their views somewhat well, while 11% said it didn't reflect their thinking. Among both Republicans and Democrats, more than 80% said the statement described their thinking at least somewhat well. Under congressional orders, the Justice Department has released trove after trove of documents that tie Epstein to a range of prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, both before and after he pleaded guilty in 2008 to charges including soliciting an underage girl. Epstein's 2019 death in a Manhattan jail cell following his arrest on charges of sex trafficking of minors was ruled a suicide. The scandal has proven a persistent political headache for President Donald Trump, who long fanned the flames of suspicions around Epstein and has been dogged by criticism that his administration was failing to fully disclose all that the U.S. government knew about the case. The disclosures have started to affect prominent people. Executives at Goldman Sachs and Hyatt Hotels have resigned. Others have retained powerful posts. Trump's Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick apparently visited Epstein's private island for lunch in 2012 and invited him to a fundraiser in 2015 for Hillary Clinton, Trump's Democratic rival in the 2016 presidential election, emails show. Dr. Mehmet Oz, Trump's administrator of the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, emailed an invitation to a Valentine's Day party in 2016 to Epstein, the Justice Department documents show. Neither Lutnick nor Oz is accused of wrongdoing. Trump, who socialized extensively with Epstein in the 1990s and 2000s, has denied any knowledge of the financier's crimes and says he broke off ties in the early 2000s before Epstein's plea deal. While Americans generally have low expectations that elites will be held accountable, they're somewhat split along partisan lines on how much longer the nation should dwell on the Epstein affair. Asked if their views were well described by the statement that it's time for the country to move on from talking about the Epstein files, 67% of Republican respondents in the poll said this captured their thinking at least somewhat well, only 21% of the Democrats said the same. That's all the time we have today with the Patriot Ledger. Have a wonderful weekend.